Our worship service incorporates all of the earth elements, both during the lighting and extinguishing of the chalice and also during our stones and water ritual. The element of water is essential to all life. It may symbolize the healing tears of love, compassionate understanding, purification, repose, or change, the passage of time, and the transcendence of earthly conditions. The element of earth, represented by the stones, is a container and maintainer of life. As matter, the stones ground and stabilize us. These stones may symbolize humility, forgiveness, practicality, wisdom, and earthly eternity. So during the gathering hymn that's coming up, you are invited to come down the aisles and place a stone in one of the containers of water. Please rise in body or spirit to sing Amazing Grace. The words are up. Oh, was it? I'm sorry. I just got all excited, Anise. There's no PowerPoint slide. Feel moved to sing if you wish. Stay seated. The Spirit is moving, Anise. The Spirit is moving. 205 if you wish to sing along. This service is all about how the Spirit moves in us. And so when the Spirit says do, you just do. You may remember back in June when I came here for candidating week, I told a story about Theodore Parker called The Turtle and the Voice of God. Now, I'm not going to tell the story again because it's far too soon. But the upshot of the story was to listen to your conscience, right? You remember that? Theodore, as a four-year-old, heard the voice of God, and his mother said, some people call that your conscience. You should always listen to it, because as long as you listen to it, you will hear it all of your life. And when you stop listening, you will stop hearing. So I really believe that our young people have a great ability to hear that voice of conscience, or whatever you want to call it. Now, I know as about a 10 or 11-year-old in school, we were writing stories, and a lot of my stories had to do with going out and saving the world, creating peace, creating things that would help other people. And I had a conversation in the last week or so with another young person who writes similar stories. We hear those stories. I don't know how many of you remember or know about 1968 in the South and the children's marches. Is there anybody here who either remembers those times or has read about those times? A few of you, yes. Okay. So when the adults were afraid about what was going to happen to them, the African-American community was starting to protest, right? When the adults were afraid because they'd been already subjected to the harsh measures of the police, the children organized to march. And they marched not once, but twice and three times. And with each march, the response by law enforcement was harsher and harsher, and yet they still marched, and they led the way, and the adults took courage. Now, last year, there was a shooting in a school in Florida, Marjorie Stoneham Douglas School, and out of that has come a youth-led movement for gun legislation that would make all of us safer. Those kids are so articulate, and they are so brave, and they are leading the way. And so I want us all to remember to listen to that voice of conscience and to act to make the world a better place. Regardless of how you go about doing it, speak up and speak out, and let us listen to the children. And with that, I would ask you to the children and youth who are in the sanctuary and going to religious education classes to meet Kristen in the back. And we will then sing them on their way. The Cambridge Platform, I think you're beginning to understand, is a document that I like to refer to often. It was written in 1648, and it is a foundational document for us as Unitarian Universalists and for the Congregationalists or the United Church of Christ. Any of the Christian churches that are congregational in form trace their roots back to this document written by our Puritan forebears in Massachusetts in that year. They had left England in search of religious tolerance. They were not able to worship freely in the places that they had gone to or were living in the UK and in Europe. And so they took advantage of the opportunity to come to this new world and establish new communities where they could organize themselves in the way that they saw fit and meet. They were free churches. But in 1648, the Church of England wrote a new confession called the Winchester Confession and decided that, you know, things were going to be just so. And the Puritans in Massachusetts said, we don't like some of what this is telling us to do. We came here to worship freely. So they reacted to that confession and the rise of Presbyterianism. And basically what they wanted to do was to maintain the authority of the gathered members of their congregation, their community. That is what congregationalism is. This document is an explanation of our congregational polity or our governance structure and how it works. It is also a document of covenantal relationships, the relationship between the member of the church and God, or whatever you call that which is greater than all of us, the relationship between members, and we have created a covenant of right relationship in this congregation for how we relate to each other. It is also a covenantal document that has to do with the minister and the elected officers of the congregation. And it also includes a covenant between congregations. We are part of a larger faith tradition, the Unitarian Universalist Association of Congregations, and we covenant with each other to be in right relationship. So this document defines the rights and responsibilities of the members, the elected officers, and the minister. There were some assumptions that they made and some mistakes that they made when they wrote up this document that proved to be true within the matter of a generation or two. Three of those mistakes had to do with the following. First of all, taxation. Because these were communities, these were towns, and the church was the town. It was a parish setup. They taxed all of the landowners in the community to support the parish, whether they belonged to the congregation or not. Now you can imagine where that would go. You don't want to be taxed for something you're not using. A second one had to do with the prevailing and historical social and civil customs of hierarchy and tiered authority. And in this new world, the relationships were more even then, even a couple hundred years before we wrote our Constitution, they were leaning towards a more democratic society. The third assumption that proved to be a big mistake was related to the reading that you just heard, the terms of becoming a member of the congregation. This notion of regeneration, which is being born again, conversion and confession being required of somebody to become a member, telling an ecstatic experience of falling in love with God. Within a generation or two, this proved to be a problem because when you have two adults, presumably married, who become married later and have children, the adults became members under this system, but then what of their children? Were the children not part of the community? So that was a problem, and they had to make some changes and steps that didn't prevent the children from being members of the community and treated in a covenantal relationship with the community. Our focus in this service is on how people became members, those excerpts that we read. I call the service Saints by Calling because that phrase appears in the Cambridge platform. We are, all of us in the Protestant tradition, and we come out of the Protestant tradition, part of the priesthood of all believers, as Martin Luther put it. And so we are saints by calling. That was later expanded by our own James Luther Adam in the 20th century to the priesthood and prophethood of all believers. So this test of membership was something that changed, and we no longer have a test of membership. I don't ask you to come and tell me how you are in relationship with God and say, okay, now you can be a member of the congregation. We don't require people to repent of their sins or profess a faith in Jesus Christ as the Son of God. What we celebrate now is many beliefs, and we share values. We don't require a testimony of a conversion experience any longer. Now, let me just say, if you are considering membership in this congregation, you can talk to me or the membership chair, and we'll help you take the necessary steps to becoming a member, which include signing the membership book, of course, making a financial commitment to this congregation annually, and more about that will be coming up in the next month or two. And members also contribute their time and talents to the upkeep and to the running and to the life of this congregation. We do, as I said, have a covenantal relationship with each other, and we raise up that covenant at different times of the year in different ways, including when we welcome new members into the congregation, and we remind ourselves that we are in covenantal relationship. And all of that is just the historical context for what I want to take you through this morning. Pat? The offering as given and received in our Unitarian Universalist congregations is a profoundly political as well as religious act. Ours is a free church, not controlled by either the nation, state, or the denomination. Some of the ways that we act on the meaning of the offering are in living out our mission to serve our communities, care for the environment, and promote equality in human relations. The offering has been gratefully received. So, in this section of our service this morning, I explore with you how, as Unitarian Universalists, we have evolved to an understanding of what it means to experience that transcending mystery, that source of wonder and awe that we refer to in the first of our six sources. Most of us are focused primarily on the seven principles of our faith and forget about the sources. And the sources are equally important. And the first one is that sense of experience, direct personal experience. And as Forrest Church wrote in Our Chosen Faith, he refers to them as awakenings, insights. Indeed, this source is reflected in our seven principles in the way telling us a way that we can continually be born anew again and again. The core principles, there are three of them, the third, the fourth, and the fifth, which refer us back to this experience. We encourage spiritual growth in each other. We promote and affirm the search for truth and meaning, each of us as individuals and collectively as a community. And we uphold the right of conscience in all people. Now, I am what is referred to sometimes as a come-outer in our faith tradition. I grew up as a Unitarian Universalist. Now, I don't know how many of you are come-outers out there in the pews, but those who came into the faith are referred to as come-inners. And oftentimes, the experience of people who are coming into Unitarian Universalism at whatever point in their lives is one of awakening, of, wow, I found a community where I feel comfortable and I feel at home and people who share my beliefs. And that experience is one of those regenerative experiences in their life, to finally find a community where they feel like everyone else is on the same page. Yes, I hear some yeses out there, and we can say amen as well. When you are cracked open by coming to church, or by something you read, or that you heard, or that you did, that is an experience of regeneration, an awakening moment, as church refers to it. It might come through your help being the marginalized and oppressed in our society. That awakening moment, realizing what somebody else's life is like and how that can be a radical change moment. Now, there are also those comments that we ministers hear like, were you talking to me this morning? Or, you said exactly what I needed to hear, and that always feels good to me as well. Sometimes we get to hear a moment that is just so poignant. One time during sharing of candles of joy and sorrow, a parent lit a candle and said that her child had said to her, God is a smile. And that just sticks with me. You know, it's an awakening moment, and that child had an awakening moment, and the parent had an awakening moment, and the congregation had an awakening moment when they heard that shared. So in the Cambridge platform, there's this business of regeneration, of being born again, and it was a requirement that you had to publicly avow that regeneration moment. I, at one point, quite a number of years ago now, had an opportunity and a need to explore what does it mean to be born again, particularly among those in our world who publicly refer to themselves and identify as born again. And I had that opportunity at a welcoming congregation conference. I sat with a Kennebunk UU, whose brother was born again. And I don't know how it came up in conversation, but I asked him, you know, just what does that mean? You know, how do they define being born again? What is that all about? Because I really wasn't sure. And what he told me was that each person has a transformative experience that they cannot explain rationally, and yet they have absolute conviction about it. It happened for them, like Theodore Parker and the voice of God. My first mentor in my ministerial formation, Emmylou Belcher, at the Naperville congregation, DuPage UU Church congregation, liked to say that all Unitarian Universalists are born again. We are all born again UUs. And I have identified myself as a born again UU. Some of you heard my call story back in June, in that same service where I talked about Theodore Parker, the turtle and the voice of God. And I'm not going to tell the whole story again, but because some of you haven't heard it, I'll give you the Reader's Digest version. And it makes sense to do that because today, January 6th, is the 11th anniversary of the day that I stood before the congregation in Auburn, Maine, First Universalist Church in Auburn, Maine, and said, I'm going to seminary. I don't know how, I don't know where, and I don't know when, but I am going to be a minister. So the very condensed version of my call story is basically, I went to a workshop in California that was all about firewalking. I had no idea what I was getting into. And during the course of the week, I had a physical healing experience. In the middle of the night, something that sounded like a voice and like woke me up. I'd had a horrible day. I just wanted to go home. And I had finally gone to sleep. And this knocking and this voice woke me up and asked to come in. And in all, this is all like, you know, time was nothing. There was all in the same moment. In the same moment as the knocking and the voice asking to come in, I sat bolt upright in bed from a deep sleep and said, yes! And my heart chakra exploded open, and in streamed this indescribable energy. And it changed my life. I was transformed by that experience. And nothing has ever been the same since then. And my teacher, for several years, that was in 2003, for 5 years, she kept saying, what are you going to do with this? You've got to do something. And so in 2008, I said to the congregation, I am going. I'm going to become a minister. And I've had other folks in the ministry tell me it is one thing to be called by whatever that is that's greater than all of us. It's quite another thing to be called by the congregation. And I was getting that call from the congregation in Auburn, Maine. And of course, you all called me here 6 months ago. So I thank you for that. And with that, we move into the next part of our service and some music. I love that. Oh. The point of those two readings was really to drive home that being born again or awakening is a universal experience for all of us. Doesn't matter who you are or what your faith tradition is. No matter how old you are, whether you're religious or non-religious, theist or atheist, scientist or poet, it's an experience that you have at least once, maybe twice, maybe all the time. We talked a few weeks ago about miracles. Miracles can sometimes be awakening moments. When we listen to that voice of conscience or that voice which is greater than all of us, we have an awakening moment. A piece of music might move us to tears. The words of a friend, a teacher, a minister stick in our minds, and we use that constellation of words as guidance long into the future. God is a smile. Nature fills us with a feeling of love or connection. We are one with the infinite. We might have an experience that's related to our physical or emotional health, whether it's something like depression, the dark night of the soul, or an addiction. We find ways to slowly bring lightness and ease back into our lives. Maybe it's through therapy or meditation, or maybe it's a 12-step program that gets you into the mindset of accepting your imperfections and loving yourself for all of who you are. Epiphany. Today is the day of the Epiphany. Epiphany means awakening. Epiphanies are life-affirming. They are metaphorically defying death, even when that transformative moment happens at the moment of death. And those of us who witness the dying process may also experience some kind of awakening us to live more fully, to savor each and every minute that we have. I have a friend in South Carolina who told me about what he refers to as his epiphany moment. He was morbidly obese at the time, and then I met him long after this. He was morbidly obese. He was basically spending his days sitting on the couch watching TV hooked up to an oxygen tank. And for whatever reason, in this moment of his epiphany, he just got the message that he could either sit there like that and die, or he could get up, excuse the language, get up off his fat ass and live. And that's what he did. And he has been living and serving others ever since. Another friend of mine told me a story about a friend of hers, a seminarian, who was looking for her first called ministry. And she struggled with mental health issues. I think it was specifically bipolar issues. And this was in New York City, and she was having some really significant anxiety about how to talk about herself with the committee that she would be meeting with in a congregation. And so she's walking down the street in New York City, you know, mulling over, how do I approach this? What do I say? How much do I reveal? And she heard a voice that said, "Go where the fear is. Go where the fear is." That has stuck with me as well. Go where the fear is. So it may be that you have some kind of experience like that in the reading around your eating habits, choosing a vegan or a vegetarian diet, being motivated to eliminate foods either for health reasons or to align with ethical principles. Your awakening moment may be around gender identity or sexual orientation. It may be in your work of linking oppressions, working across race, culture, ability, sex, sexual orientation, gender identity. The point is that it's universal. It's affirmed in all cultures, as our first source puts it. It can happen anytime, anywhere, and in many, many different ways. So don't expect it to be as dramatic and mysterious as mine was. It may be just a simple moment of wonder and awe. But allow that feeling of being reborn, renewed, regenerated, let it into your life. Let it come out of a different place and move you into a new place. It might occur in steps, as Michael Dowd's did. They happen when we least expect them. And sometimes we don't even realize that they've happened until a long time afterwards. We are born again and again and again with each spiritual transformation. Awakenings are opportunities for spiritual growth and maturation. Conversion, awakening, spiritual transformation, maturation, call it what you will. It is about growth, meaning, and the voice of conscience. It is about life-affirming life. Would you sing with me now our hymn number 123, Spirit of Life? The words will appear up there on the wall. So as we hold these sorrows and joys in our hearts, those both spoken and unspoken, would you join with me now in a time of silence, time of meditation and prayer? Amen. Blessed be and namaste. I have a reading from the German poet Rilke, which is, I think, a wonderful prayer about how we can live our lives. Before he makes each one. Before he makes each one of us, God speaks. Then, without speaking, he takes each one out of the darkness. And these are the cloudy words God speaks before each of us begins. You have been sent out by your senses. Go to the furthest edge of desire and give me clothing. Burn like a great fire so that the stretched out shadows of the things of the world cover me completely. Let everything happen to you, beauty and terror. You must just go. No feeling is the farthest you can go. Don't let yourself be separated from me. The country called life is close. By its seriousness, you will know it. Give me your hand. Would you rise now in body or spirit for our chalice extinguishing, after which we will have a rousing end with When the Saints Go Marching In with Jen on trombone, and feel free to move about. So extinguishing our chalice, because the worship has ended, our service begins.